This is day six of this July 2016 7-day session. We'll resume reading from our text, Zen Essence, which is a collection of teachings by a whole slew of Chinese Zen masters. This is translated and edited by Thomas Cleary. We'll start with a Zen master, Huang Long. His dates are in the thousands. One 1002 to 1069. He says, seekers should open their own eyes. Don't let yourselves in for regret later on. While we have the opportunity in this human life, use it to awaken to your true nature. He continues, Zen cannot be reached by psychic powers or by cultivation of special experiences. Zen cannot be discussed by means of the knowledge or intelligence of the merely learned. Cannot be reached by cultivation of special experiences. And yet, there have always been people, still today, who this is their aspiration to have remarkable experiences. Want to see things as they are, not have remarkable experiences. Experiences come and go, but when once having seen, truly seen, into the essential nature of reality, that doesn't go. It's not like other experiences of elevated experiences or paranormal insights. Someone once said that regarding this vision that Saint Paul had on the road to Damascus, from a Zen perspective, it's a makyo. When ordinary and sacred feelings are both forgotten, being is revealed, real and eternal. Just detach from arbitrary involvements and you awaken to being as it is. When ordinary and sacred feelings are forgotten, it is when we are able to not get attached to ordinary feelings or feelings, religious feelings, let's say, so-called holy feelings. Not getting attached, but still allowing feelings, free expression, while we're having them. This is so in Sesshin too. I think too many people have the mistaken idea that we can't allow ourselves to cry in Sesshin, or shouldn't in the Zendo or something. This is wrong. If we freely cry without trying to hang on to it, dwelling in the feeling, then this is the way things are. Although these are the leavings of an ancient Zen master, so that was a quote, when ordinary and sacred feelings of forgotten being is revealed. And he says, although these are the leavings of an ancient Zen master, there are many people who cannot partake of them, I guess accept them. I've lost considerable profit just by bringing them up. Can anyone discern? If you can, you will recognize the disease of, quote, Buddhism, and the disease of, quote, Zen. Well, again, being attached to the idea of Buddhism, the concept of Zen, the doctrine, the dogma, the words, the concepts. All sages since remote antiquity have entered the pit of life and death, gone into the fire of ignorance to help people out. What about you? How do you enter? Enter the pit of life and death, gone into the fire of ignorance. In other words, seeing deeply into our nature, which includes our delusions. Our true nature is, our delusions are not apart from this true nature. Looking directly, courageously into the mind, facing ourselves. He says to do this to help people out. Well, granted, not everyone has others in mind when doing this, but it is for the benefit of others, really. When we purify our minds, when we can see and see into and purify our minds, then this is enabling us to more effectively help others, truly help others. And then he turns and asks us, what about you? How do you enter? If people can enter, this can be called not burning in fire, not drowning in water. He's talking here about no self. You're free of self-concern when you're free of thoughts of self and other. Then there's an invincibility there. Because there's no one to protect, no one to defend. And he says if people cannot enter, they not only cannot help themselves, they cannot help others. So, again, fire. Our tendency is to retreat from fire, from the fire of our own afflictions, but we are called on to enter this fire. Zen Master Mumon, who compiled the Mumonkan, said, if you wish to know real gold, see it in the midst of fire. Next, there are a few from Zen Master Yang Chi, living pretty much the same time, the 900s and 1000s. Someone asked Yang Chi, it is said, if you want to escape from clamor in the mind, you should read the ancient teaching. And then the questioner says, what is the ancient teaching? Yang Chi replied, the moon is bright in space, the waves are calm on the ocean. The inquirer asked, how does one read it? Yang Chi said, watch your step. This is an example of an exchange in which the real significance of it may be in the way in which this inquirer, what he is presenting in terms of himself, the way he's asking, and Yang Chi seeing into his mind. It's a simple enough question. How does one read it? Watch your step. I am asked to expound the supreme vehicle of Zen, but if it is the supreme vehicle, even the sages stand aside. Buddhas and Zen masters disappear. Why? Because you are all the same as the Buddhas of old. But can you really believe and trust this? If you really can, let us all disband and go our separate ways. If you don't leave, I'll just go on fooling you. Fooling, deceiving, in Zen terms, I mean continue using words, which in doing so we always risk obscuring the truth. Even now, these words. Mind is the faculty, phenomena are the data. Both are like scratches in a mirror. And this is Cleary's, here's translations of what we could also call mind and things. Such as we say in Affirming Faith in Mind, things are things because of mind, and as mind is mind because of things. Or subject and object. Both are like scratches in a mirror. When there are no scratches or dust, the clarity of the mirror shows. When mind and phenomena are both forgotten, then your nature is real. Here's an unusual one. Someone asked Yang Chi, when the founder of Zen came from India to China, he sat facing a wall for 9 years. What does this mean? Yang Chi said, as an Indian, he couldn't speak Chinese. As good as any other answer to that question, what does it mean? Sitting facing the wall, what's it mean? And this is a Zen master, Wu Zu, Japanese Goso. Also known as Chinese master Fa Yin. Very, very, very famous master of the Chinese masters. And that we have some material on this in the afterword. Wu Zu had already reached middle age when he entered Zen specialization under the tutelage of one of the Zen prodigies of the time, Bai Yun, a direct heir of Yang Qi, who became a Zen teacher at an unusually young age and passed away early. Bai Yun sent Wu Zu to run the mill operated by the Zen monastery in a town below the mountain on which the monastery was located. It is said that whenever monks would come down the mountain snooping around, Wu Zu would scandalize them by flirting with the young women who came to the mill. He was later known for a skill in teaching that was unique in his time, using graphic stories, colorful metaphors, earthy poetry, profound abstractions, paradoxical actions, and forthright statements to open the minds of his hearers. Wu Zu made a point of the need for Zen guides, I guess he means teachers, to strip away even the seeker's most cherished conceptions in order for them to reach the subtlety of Zen that cannot be categorized or defined in any conventional terms, cannot be imagined, and cannot be reached by thought. He says this is the subtlety of Zen that cannot be categorized, defined, imagined, so forth. This is just reaching a state of complete emptiness in the mind. The mind is as clear and featureless, without thoughts, unscored by thoughts and ideas, or any of these other things. This anyone can do through complete absorption in the practice one is working on, can reach this state of simplicity, openness. But even this subtlety, state of emptiness, is not to be made into a nest in mature Zen, and it is not to be taken personally as an attainment. As the Zen proverb has it, a general may establish peace, but it is not for the general to see peace. Here, I think we can understand this as the fact that we can come to awakening, but that doesn't change our life at a single stroke. It establishes the basis for changing our life. It doesn't transform us just like that, but it establishes the basis for transforming ourselves. It's the way in. It's seeing the illusory nature of self, but then the habits of self, the mental habits, continue on. As another master said, the wind ceases, but the waves still surge. This Wu Zu said, when there is not a speck of cloud dotting the great clarity for 10,000 miles, sun and moon in the original sky are of themselves clear. And then this is where Wuzhu says, it is not permitted for a general to see great peace, but a general may establish great peace. To practice Zen, first you must obtain directions to the ultimate goal. Hearing sound and seeing form are inconceivable. That is, when we are just hearing, with no concepts in the mind, when we're just seeing, without concepts, from the eternal sky, every night the moon shines on every home. Its reflection descends into a quiet pool, but how many know? These masters loved using the moon as a metaphor for this luminous true mind of ours. The moon shines on every home, equally, everyone. Everyone is bathed in this moonlight. But how many know? Talking about Zen all the time is like looking for fish tracks in a dry riverbed. You could say, what he's saying is, after you've drained the life out of the real thing by talking about it, you can't expect to find evidence of life. The next one here is Yuan Wu, who is considered the editor of the Blue Cliff Record. Earlier we read from Shui Do or Secho. He compiled it, but he didn't edit it. He didn't. This editor Yuan Wu included his instructions and incidental remarks and explanations in the Blue Cliff Record. And he also lived in the beginning of the second millennium. That puts him in the Song Dynasty. We've now left the Tang Dynasty behind and we're in the Song. I once read a whole book that argued that although the Tang Dynasty has come to be known as the Golden Age of Zen, that the Song Dynasty really was the that Zen or Chan in the Song Dynasty reached its greatest height. Some material on him. He's considered one of Wu Zhu's three most illustrious disciples. He also wrote a large collection of his talks and verses and letters, and these are collected under the title Essentials of Mind, which I don't think has been translated into English. And it's these selections that I'll be reading from are from this Essentials of Mind. Like his teacher, Wu Zhu, Yuan Wu was highly critical of deteriorated Zen teaching. He noted that many intellectuals and educated people study Zen as a hobby and conversation piece. Zen was used as a status symbol and became the basis for a great deal of snobbery because of its honored position in Chinese culture. This is exactly what Roshi Kaplow has described as the state of things in New York when he was first taking an interest in Zen. When he came back from the war and he was auditing courses with D.T. Suzuki at Columbia in New York, and he talked about going to cocktail parties where people were tossing around koans and posing as experts on Zen. He described one fellow at a party he went to who just sat in the lotus position all night in the chair in the middle of this party. It's always in Japan. I can't be sure about China. It sounds like it's the same. It was the same in China, but in Japan, it got its start. It got its footing among the intelligentsia, they say, the elite, and then gradually worked its way into a more common class of people. We can hope that this happens here too. Here's an interesting thing. Yuan Wu insisted on the right purpose and inspiration for Zen practice, particularly recommending the exercise of looking at death to clarify the will. I don't know how that practice would work exactly. But really, when we are letting go of thoughts, we are looking at death. We are looking at the death of the self, because the self only exists as a cluster of thoughts and concepts and memories. That's all the self is. So when we detach from thoughts, concepts, memories, associations, all of the outpourings of the discriminating mind, when we detach from that, there is no self. That's the death of the self, temporarily, as long as our attention is beyond, is off of our thoughts. So really we have the chance to practice dying all the time. We're doing dry runs of dying. Every time we detach from thoughts so thoroughly that there's nobody left. And this Yuan Wu says, if you have developed great capacity and cutting insight, you can undertake Zen right where you are. Without getting it from another, you understand clearly on your own. So he's reminding us how difficult it is without great capacity and cutting insight to maintain this practice, truly maintain this practice in the thick of every kind of circumstances that we might find ourselves. But that this is within our grasp. We can do this. And it's our it's part of practice to learn to do this, to make our best efforts. He says this, the penetrating spiritual light and vast open tranquility have never been interrupted since beginningless time. This is that blue sky behind the clouds. Where does it begin? Where does it end? Human lives go along with circumstances. It is not necessary to reject activity and seek quiet. Just make yourself inwardly empty while outwardly harmonious. Then you will be at peace in the midst of frenetic activity in the world. Human lives go along with circumstances. Well, this is what we want to do anyway. This is what we aspire to do, is to not set ourselves in opposition to change, but to move along with change. This we do by being free of thoughts, empty, inwardly empty while outwardly harmonious. This is functioning like clouds and water. Just as saying those words brings up for me the memory of that weekend, our 50th anniversary. So many people afterwards said this, and this is my experience too, that it was so remarkably flowing and harmonious. A lot of empty minds there. Still, Yuan Wu, Zen teachers of true vision and great liberation have made changes in method along the way to prevent people from sticking to names and forms and falling into rationalizations. It's always something that a teacher has to be aware of, is not letting things calcify, forms, rituals. Over the course of centuries, Zen has branched out into different schools with individual methods, but the purpose is still the same, to point directly to the human mind. Says what is most difficult to rectify is half-baked Zen, where you stick to quiet stillness and consider this the ultimate treasure, keeping it in your heart, radiantly aware of it all the time, carrying around a bunch of mixed-up knowledge and understanding, claiming to have vision and to have attained the approval of a Zen master, just increasing your egoism. I think this is the Soto school is and maybe has been for centuries especially at risk for this, with the downplaying of the need to awaken to one's true nature and the strong emphasis on form and ritual and ceremony, one can go very far in Soto Zen without ever really breaking free of these attachments to stillness and impeccable form. It seems that it's always been a danger that one will stop really working somewhere along the way, either after an initial awakening or even before, when one has settled into a certain, well, comfort zone, as I said this morning. I can reach a comfort with sitting for 7 days and then stay there. So much more that is possible in Sesshin than reaching a state of deep calm. That's itself is wonderful. Who wouldn't want that? So immensely soothing to people who have very active lives, who can't ever find time to stop and sit much. Come to Sesshin, it's such a huge kind of sanctuary from all of that tumult. But why settle for that? Why settle for just a week of deep calm? The calming the mind is just the setting the stage for the insight. True Zen practice is both. In Buddhist terms, it's the two sides are shamatha and vipassana. Shamatha means the quieting or the calming of the mind, and vipassana doesn't mean just a certain type of Buddhism, but it means insight into. So to use the wonderful simile, it's like a pond. It's all roiled up from strong winds and muddy and can't see. Well, the shamatha, the quieting, is having those, allowing the wind to gradually die out so that the water quiets down and the mud settles. But then there's the seeing into it, seeing into the bottom of this mind, seeing into its nature, its essence. This is within everyone's grasp right now. Don't doubt it. Don't start thinking about the end of Sesshin. So much more that can happen today and tomorrow. So much more. Everyone has done so much work. The stage is set. The mind is prepared. The mind is ready. The mind is quiet, open, receptive. Don't stop now. We'll stop now and recite the four vows. All beings without number, I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to
attend all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain.